All right, partner. Keep on rolling, baby. You know what time it is.
You're listening to the Kill or Be Killed podcast with your host, Damian Ross, founder and master instructor of the self-defense company.
Welcome to the Kill or Be Killed podcast. I'm your host, Damian Ross, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Archangel. And remember, you can listen to the Kill or Be Killed podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at our website, myselfdefensetraining.com, where you can also find the best self-defense training on the planet. Mike, are you with us?
I am. It's derby season. I'm ready to kickstart.
I'm jealous, man. I am, you know, I gotta get down there. I mean, I would be three bottles in the bourbon at this point.
I can help you out with that.
I think actually you already have. I'm extremely jealous because it's warm where you are. It's cold where I am. And it makes me very, very, very upset. So I'm not going to talk to you about it anymore. Today's topic is campus safety. And we've got two pretty incredible guests. The first one is a gentleman by the name of Bernie McPherson. We've had him on the show before. He's an instructor at the University of Hawaii. He's also a registered nurse and a sexual assault nurse examiner, former Army Ranger, and lifelong martial artist with multiple black belts. Bernie, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hello. I'm going to say good afternoon, although I understand it's evening back there on the East Coast.
It is on the mainland. It is cold and dark already. And the other person I have with me is a special young man by the name of Will Kazokas. He is a junior at Cal Poly studying animal science. He plans to be a very specific type of veterinarian. And, this episode today was actually inspired by a speech he gave in his oral communication course. Without getting too much into the speech, again, you know, being a person of this of an older, you know, old later generation, you know, your position on, you know, people being able to protect themselves was a very throwback type of mindset. One of the things you opened your speech with was the inspiration. Would you talk about the inspiration for your speech, if you will?
Yes, sir. No okay. Problem. Well, I wrote the speech for Sage. She is my girlfriend's little sister, and she was actually raped and assaulted a few months ago. And it was the first time I had to deal with something like that, with that kind of fear and that just, you know, feeling of being powerless.
Right.
And I saw firsthand what it did to the people around her, to my girlfriend, to her parents, to my parents. And, you know, it changed how I viewed a lot of things and a lot of my opinions that had been completely different before.
Sure. Sure. Now, when you delivered the speech, you kind of called everybody out. and you know, it's been our experience when we do this, and what we do is, you know, when people think about personal protection and self-defense, it's something that they know they need. It's something they think they can do, but in reality, most people can't. And you confronted your class and basically, you know, for lack of called them a bunch of wussies, if you will. not so few words. What was their reaction to that? What were your fellow students? How did any of them come up to you after your speech?
Well, probably one of the most shocking things for them to hear was I cussed in a speech in a college, you know, setting. And right. that, which, I mean, the purpose of that was really just to get their attention. That's what I was trying to do. The entire point of my speech was to get people's attention. Because I really feel it, like you said, that we think that we have this ability. We have this blown up, out of proportion thought of ourselves that, oh, yeah, in that situation, I'd be able to handle myself. But right. in reality, if you've never found yourself in that situation, then you don't know what's going to happen. And their reaction was varied, I'd say. Most right. of the people there were just trying to get through the class. And so
sure,
it didn't make that much of an impact. But there were a few girls that came up to me after class, a few of my classmates, and they just said that I scared them.
Right.
Which, you know, wasn't entirely the purpose. I didn't want to scare people. I just want them to be aware.
Right.
You know, and not have to experience the same thing that I did.
Well, I think, you know, when people see things like firearms, when they see things like guards, when they see things, when they hear things like self-defense, and they, you know, it forces them to face that reality that this happens and people, you know, get hurt and people die and people get raped. And that's very real. So when you do it, you know, when you talk about these matters, some people just rather not think about it. And part of, you know, our biggest challenge is, you know, helping people and forcing them to think about it and giving them some simple tools to deal with it. You know, when, you know, what's happening on campus and, you know, we're seeing increasing violence around the world, increasing violence on campus, and are students taking it upon themselves to find any solutions?
I've seen none of that. No. In an email, we had spoken about, you know, what campuses are doing as well right. and what students are doing. And I don't know if it's maybe because I am in that setting, but I don't see anything. I have not seen any change. This is my third year at a university and I haven't seen anything. I get an email from my university once every other month, you know, notifying us about another rape or assault or robbery and there's no change.
What is the reaction to that? So when you know there's trauma that's sent out to the campus, what are your peers saying? Are you noticing it? Do people talk about it? Do people avoid it? And then from Bernie, what I'd like to hear the other side is what does the campus say about it? I mean, and we know a lot of the liabilities, but kind of like to vocalize it a little bit. But Will, again, from your perspective, when that kind of news hits out in the lunchroom, you know, in the hallways, what's the reaction?
None. It goes to their spam folder. Nobody cares. Nobody notices. Nobody says anything. Nobody does anything.
Now, do you know of people on campus? Because I knew of people on campus that were attacked when I was in college. And, you know, I guess, you know, obviously I am who I am and this is how it was built. So, you know, we made it a point to make sure that we were around and, you know, making sure if we saw someone walking home alone, that just didn't happen if we were around. And we made sure that, I guess the people that were in our sphere of influence were taken care of. So I guess, you know, from as Bernie, as Mike said, from a administration perspective, I mean, how do they have any ongoing action in place to, you know, to increase student safety and student awareness? Bernie, there?
Let me take a shot at that. Can I do that?
Yes, Bernie? Please. Yes, please.
Okay. Bernie McPherson here. I am actually a doctoral dissertation student at the University of Southern California. The subject of my dissertation is minimizing injuries related to interpersonal violence. I've been looking at this since about 2012 and looking at the literature from 2007 forward. From a real academic standpoint, lots of literature out there about the care of someone who has been assaulted and how they need physical as well as emotional support, the friends need to gather around them, things of that nature. There's not much in the academic literature about what to do at the moment of the assault, and that's the point of my dissertation. Looking at that, I regret that the current statistics are that there are about 5 million assaults on or related to the university campus. That doesn't count high school, elementary school, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say assaults, it's not including things like bullying, cyberbullying, sexual harassment. This is some kind of physical aggressive motion that happens toward another person. When I mentioned the 5 million assaults that are recorded, there are two important items to realize. Number one, there are about 20 million university students in the United States, not counting online students. If you're good at math, 5 out of 20, one quarter of people that
right.
are involved in the campus
right.
are involved in some kind of a physical assault. So I am just absolutely appalled that, as was mentioned, there's very little being done about what do you do at the moment of the assault. There's lots of stuff out there about how do we take care of somebody once they've been assaulted.
My
background, as you mentioned, is that I'm a registered nurse. I would much rather prevent the injuries than have to deal with them. So my dissertation has to do with how are we going to prevent you from getting injured?
Right. And I think we're, as a society, we're all very good at helping each other. You know, in the 9/11, I mean, everybody, you know, being in the New York area and being very close to that that attack, you know, everybody pulled up, everybody was, you know, everybody was great. But if, you know, before it, if you were to say, okay, well, we need to have, you know, tighter security at the airport, we need to, you know, empower people and flight attendants to stop the attack, you know, to stop this from happening again, you would have gotten a huge amount of resistance. And then the farther we get away from this, the attack, the less people, you know, it concerns them, because you know, we've got a natural ability to heal and to recover. But we also have something called denial. And there's another thing that happens, which I would like to talk about, is when we talk about teaching people to protect themselves, especially women, there's this whole victim blaming thing that happens where, and it's still this mentality, you know, shocks me, that if we teach someone self-defense, or we offer them self-defense and they don't take it, like for some reason where it's their fault that they're getting attacked. And that's the same mentality that if a woman wears a short skirt, she's asking to be raped. You know, and I think, you know, Bertie and I, we had spoke offline about this. You know, my feeling is that's like saying, you're getting car insurance and you're just begging for a drunk driver to plow into you at a stop sign. You know, I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense. I think, you know, really what needs to happen is we've got, you know, a lot of preventative measures, you know, with lighting and increased security and communication places and call boxes, and that's great. But we also have, and we've got the, aftermath, you know, dealing with the trauma and dealing with the recovery. But now we need to put in that next piece of the puzzle, which is giving people the power to protect themselves. And, you know, Bernie, you brought up again some interesting points when, you know, as we've gotten to know each other over the last year or so. One of the things is, you know, if you wouldn't mind talking about, is, you know, the statistics on people who actually resist an assault or rape. You know, how often are they successful in doing that?
Actually, the numbers are very, very encouraging. But before I talk about the numbers, let me step back and talk about, you had mentioned earlier in this podcast, different people's responses to what's
yes.
happening in an overall theoretical idea of, gee, should we do something about this? I have a buddy who I think is a really brilliant man, and he classifies people into three groups. He says people are either sheep or they're sheepdogs. Or there was. Does that sound right. familiar? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
The fact of the matter is that. That's right. Yes, I do. those of you that are not familiar with it, that's a semi quote from Damien Ross himself, by the way.
Yes, but I stole that from somebody else, and I know Will used it as well.
Okay, very good. Then we're familiar with the analogy. And the analogy is very true. The vast majority of people, you don't want to call them sheep, but for purposes of this analogy, they don't know how to protect themselves, and they haven't really had much experience with, gee, what do I do even thinking about what happens? There are the wolves that are the minority, but one wolf can take down an awful lot of sheep out there.
Right.
How many times do you hear on the news, well, here's a guy with 19 prior convictions who's now been arrested for assaulting. I personally have some issues with that, but I'll stay away from that for political
reasons. We'll do a whole other podcast.
Yeah. And then there's the other group, the sheepdogs, and I'm going to claim that's people like you and me, as well as folks that are getting the word out there saying, we can do something about this. We don't have to just idly sit by and wait for someone to be assaulted and then mount some kind of an action. Let's take some preemptive actions. There are a number of really good examples of this. The increased use of safety belts on America's highways has decreased the amount of deaths on the highways. The increased number of immunizations that we've given people against measles, mumps, rubella, smallpox, et cetera, almost eliminated all of those diseases. There's probably no way we'll ever completely eliminate physical violence in our society, but you know what? We'd have a lot less of it if people could stand up and defend themselves. The wolves would have to think twice about, do I want to go after this target or not?
Right, right. Now,
you asked me to talk about the numbers.
Yes.
Actually, close to 90% of people that put up some kind of a fight, any kind of a fight, even without extensive training, the person that is attacking them pretty quickly breaks off the assault thinking, I want an easy target. I don't want to fight.
Right. It's that predator. Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
The predators predators are afraid of three things. Number one, they don't want to be identified. Number two, they don't want to be caught. Number three, they don't want to get hurt. They understand pain. They may not understand a lot of other things in our society, but they do understand those three things.
Right. And, you know, keep going, please.
If there's even an inkling that this person is going to put up some kind of a fight, real frequently the assailant will break off the attack and actually run away, even though it's not a schooled kind of a response, like you would get from somebody who's a trained police officer or someone like me that was in the Army for years and years.
Right.
If people would go through something, even a simple amount of training that takes a few hours, and go through the kind of training that has some kind of a basis in science, something that has been used before, something that looks at, here are the tools that you carry with you all the time.
Right.
Here are the targets that you can strike, the nose, the side of the jaw, the groin, things of that nature. Put that into action with probably, because I'm an academic, I tend to think of, I want to do a one-semester self-defense program at the university because I tend to be university-oriented. But we could do the same thing with a high school, and we could even do the same thing with people in general, get on and do even things like video training that's offered through SDTS.
Right.
Be aware of the fact that you can do something. The hand yoke and the edge of hand, those two defenses on their own would probably dissuade a lot of assailants, don't you think?
You're preaching to the preacher.
I was going to follow back to Will. I mean, Bernie, when you talk about 5 million people, I mean, literally that's the population of Costa Rica being assaulted every year. I mean, it's an insane number.
I think that actually happens in Costa Rica, Michael.
I thought you just go there to drink. I don't know.
Right.
Why is it such a bad place?
At least every time I've gone.
But for Will, you know, it's sort of like we all kind of have an awakening in our lives. And, you know, I heard about your girlfriend's sister's awakening. But talk to us a little bit about your journey. I mean, you have some experience with training. I mean, we all kind of think we know what we know because we were that confident in ourselves. And then something in life happens, And we kind of wake up from the fantasy of backflips and tornado kicks and coming out of a triple lutz type deal.
Right.
Talk to me about that moment and this journey that you took after that.
Well, it's definitely been a journey. It wasn't isolated to that one event. I've always been, for the lack of a better word, aggressive. I've been loud, and I'm a big person, and trouble has found me before, and I've defended myself, and I've defended others, and so that's always been there. But just the entire definition of self-defense changed for me when that incident happened with my girlfriend's sister. And then there were a few incidents that happened after that. Actually, only a few weeks after Sage was raped, her sister, my girlfriend, was followed home to her dorm on campus, and I made her call the police, and the police showed up, and they did nothing. They said, go to a public place and wait, and we'll meet you there. She was at a CVS for a few hours, and then they left, and then she had to continue walking home alone.
Really?
Yeah. The campus police did nothing. They didn't even take her back to her apartment.
Home.
No, they didn't. They left her there. She was, and then CVS closed, and she was kicked out, and you know, at 2 a.m. in Tampa,
right,
Florida,
right.
Which, and yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that was,
no, yeah, I know what's going on there.
Yeah, exactly.
But, holy Jesus. Especially with campus safety. I mean, that is like, and then I'm speechless. Somebody help me.
I'm actually delighted.
Back to what we all know, right? We know that there's a perception that law enforcement's job is to protect you, and that's just not what we have this establishment to do.
Right.
Law enforcement is to protect and enforce the law. And if there's ambiguities of a law not being broken or in imminent danger, then that shelter is broken. That there's no way to statistically staff law enforcement to prevent crime. And that's where the ownership for citizens comes from. We have to say, you know what, I'm responsible for at least this percentage of it before
right.
I have to call in some backup.
Right.
And see,
right.
See, that was the big changing point for me, was that from then on, self-defense didn't just mean defending myself. Self-defense had a broader definition from then on. It was defending those I loved and those who I knew couldn't defend themselves in those situations, or didn't know how to, at least.
Right.
That was the big changing point for me, the turning point.
And now, one of the points I want to bring up now, back to, you know, what Bernie was speaking about, when you're actually in the act of defending yourself, and mm-hmm. the predator and prey mentality, and the people that I drive home, and you've got to understand, is that predators pick easy targets because they think they're going to be successful. That's it. I mean, they're out. They're not looking for a title fight. They're not looking for a challenge. They're looking to accomplish a task as efficiently as possible without getting caught, identified, or injured. Now, as soon as you change their expectation, as soon as you resist, as soon as you fight back, the vast majority of them break off, just like, you know, a swimmer getting attacked by a shark. You know, all of a sudden the shark gets poked in the eye or pulled. Something is not right to the shark. He's going to swim away. You're still going to get bit. It's still going to cause a lot of pain, but it's not going to be as painful as what's going to happen if you don't fight off the shark. And, you know, that's what we need to get people to accept, that reality, and some pretty good news. If you don't fight back, you're going to be a lot worse off than if you do fight back.
Mm-hmm.
So, finally, I just, again, we've been tipping around this. It's like looking at, you know, what the solutions are, and, well, we already know them. You know, personally, I've been, you know, my goal with the self-defense company is to enable everyone, just give people the tools to protect themselves, period, and to do it as quickly and as easily as possible. That's it. you know, I was with, I know Bernie, Michael, myself, and Will, I don't know your martial arts experience. But, you know, I've got a place in my heart for martial arts. I love it. And I'm huge, huge, huge judo guy. I love judo. But again, there's, you know, it's a more about, that's more of a journey of oneself and perfection and community than it is, you know, just knowing what you need to do to protect yourself. And I think, you know, with all of the, you know, so if for example, I'm in, if some of you didn't know, I'm in the fire service as well. About over a year ago, I joined the fire department because our town needed it. Somebody asked me, and if you ask me to do something and it seems reasonable and I'm going to help people, yeah, I do it. So I did it. You know, the fire prevention, fire service has done a great job of prevention, education, training, and then telling people what to do when there's a fire. So, you know, schools have fire drills, businesses have fire drills. I mean, we know what to do. Do businesses have, I mean, now schools are starting to have, you know, I hate to use the term active shooter, it's really active killer, but, you know, now schools are starting to have active shooter drills. Now, I don't think many places of business are doing any of that type of training, but, you know, we need to make it more, you know, we've got to close the loop on this and we've got to help people, you know, be able to incorporate self-defense into their lifestyle. And if you don't have 5, 20, 50 minutes, I mean, I know people that, even myself, it's not like every day I go out and, you know, train, but, you know, sometimes sometimes I have a half hour, an hour, whatever, great. Other days, 5, 10, 15 minutes. And sometimes even if you're just studying or reading, you know, you can incorporate it in your lifestyle. I think, Michael, any parting shots? Anything to wrap this up?
No, I mean, I think it's been a great session. I mean, we know that we have an identified problem, and especially within the university world. And it's good to see some people coming together around the world, and we found two great ones today to help us with that solution. Bernie is absolutely a pinnacle part of this and his thesis to help us bridge a gap to the Department of Education and offer a solution. Nobody wants to take the liability risks of saying that active resistance works. And right. It has not been easy to find those voices and to find those students. So I just really appreciate the advocates that we've had on the cast today, because we absolutely need you and we can't do it without you.
Right. So Will and Bernie, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Again, I think Michael said it better than I did. So on that note, I'm sure we'll be talking again. This is Damien Ross and Mike Archangel, and you've been listening to the Kill or Be Killed podcast. Remember, you can listen to the Kill or Be Killed podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at our website, myselfdefensetraining.com, where you can also find the best self-defense training on the planet. Until next time, everybody, train on. Tell me what you're gonna do now.